This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. We're looking ahead at 2017 this week with Derek Hamm, senior reporter for News Service of Florida, with us via Skype, Rosemary O'Hara, editorial page editor for the Sun Sentinel, and Gary Finout, reporter in Tallahassee for the Associated Press. So happy new year to everybody here. First, let's admit this. The problem with predictions is that they're about the future. With that said, let's talk about the future here. And Rosemary, let's start with the biggest story of 2016, the biggest story initially in 2017, which is a new president of the United States, Donald Trump, a part-time Florida resident. What does his presidency mean for Florida?
You know, it's so unpredictable. You know, it was hard to get straight answers during the campaign. And so when I look at what does a Trump presidency look like, I wish I had a good idea. I think that, if there are Supreme Court picks, mm-hmm. that we're going to see a, you know, conservative picks.
There's going to be at least one. We know that.
Yes. It's an unknown to me.
Gary, you want to take a wild stab at least what it could mean for Florida, given Governor Scott's seemingly political friendship with the president-elect?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that could happen to Florida that are affected by this presidency, and more importantly, also the control of Congress by Republicans with a friendly president. I don't know how quickly everything's going to come to pass, but when you think about everything from health care and block grants and things of that nature and how that relationship is going to change, it could mean a whole lot of a whole series of cascading events. In the next, I don't know if it's going to happen immediately, but probably in the next 12 to 24 months, you could have lots of major things happen and sort of force us to change all sorts of things that we've sort of taken for granted, especially in the arena of healthcare.
Yeah. Derek Hamm, Florida's governor, the legislature has had an antagonistic relationship with the Obama administration, presumably with the Republican administration, perhaps some of that poking and prodding may move to the wayside. What could that mean, to Gary's point, not only President-elect Trump, but also the Republicans in control of the legislature there in Congress?
Well, I agree with what Gary said. I think that we will see things that the Republicans that control the state legislature have wanted in terms of health care and have been thwarted by, and the Republican governor, Governor Scott, have been thwarted by Congress and the President Obama. I think the other arena that we might see some significant changes in would be education, with the choice of a charter school, charter school and voucher mm-hmm. education secretary. We may see that. I agree with Gary that it'll take a little while for it to trickle down. I mean, what does it mean for Florida, where we are split pretty much 50-50, have been pretty much 50-50 in terms of voter registration between Democrats and Republicans, that now, you know, Democrats no longer have any power, not only on the state level, but also on the national level. I'm wondering, you know, as an aside to this, what this will mean in terms of the, you know, reinvention of the Democratic Party on the state level. Hmm. They're preparing to do that.
It's looking well beyond 2017 into 2018. But Rosemary, let's do that here for a moment. What could that mean? Where do Democrats look at a state level in 2017 as they perhaps begin to position themselves politically for what's going to be another big year in 2018, a governor's race and a U.S. Senate race specifically here in Florida?
Well, I don't think that the Democrats have great bench strength. Where their power is in mayoral seats. You've got Mayor Phil Levine of Miami Beach mm-hmm. talking about running for governor, Bob Buckhorn from Tampa. Maybe Buddy Dyer from Orlando, and the Tallahassee mayor. There seems to be a draft him effort. And then Gwen Graham, former representative. So where the Democrats have some muscle is at the urban level, but in at county commission levels, in the Florida House, in the Florida Senate, They are backbenchers.
It is a supermajority Republicans in power in Tallahassee in March when the new legislative session will begin. There'll be 20 new state senators, 46 new state representatives in Tallahassee. Democrats were able to gain one seat in the state Senate, two in the House. Republicans still massively in control there in Tallahassee, though. The new Senate President Joe Negron says the Florida Senate will focus on higher education, water issues here in South Florida, and how to get the most out of Florida taxpayer dollars.
Within our $82 billion budget, that we can fund the priorities of today instead of simply duplicating the decisions of yesterday. We will do this in an open and a transparent manner.
Now, the new House Speaker, Richard Corcoran, has gone after special interests and lobbyists in his chamber, touting some new rules in hopes of lessening their influence in Tallahassee.
Too many bills are filed every legislative session by members who have been given to them by the lobbyists and the special interests. Too many lobbyists see themselves as the power brokers of this process.
Too many lobbyists in the House, an open and transparent manner in the Senate is promised. Gary Fineout, does this set up any kind of clash of management styles between the two chambers as the legislative session approaches?
Absolutely. I think that there's a running joke already going on in Tallahassee that, don't schedule any late spring vacations. Assume that you might be here until June.
Yeah.
Basically what you have here is it's an interesting showdown. I mean, there are correctly two chambers, and they can do their rules however way they want, but they've set things in motion that, you possibly could have some real arguments, some real disagreements over the primacy of each chamber to do what it wants, and especially in the issue of the budget, because you have two very different approaches to the way that we're going to deal with that. And, of course, as anyone who follows Tallahassee very closely knows, the budget, while seemingly sort of this just routine thing that you have to do every year, it is the grease for the system.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you can't pass a budget, if you can't reach an agreement on a budget, everything else stalls and is held up in the process.
And Gary, this budget particularly is important because the state long-range financial forecasts tell us that not in the coming fiscal year that will be addressed with this budget coming out this spring, but in the next one, in 18 months, the state faces more than $1.5 billion shortfall. And they need to address that, and they know they need to address that beginning this spring.
Yes, they need to address it. But now I think it's important to remember when we define that shortfall, that's as if we did things in a normal fashion and we funded things that – well, what I mean by that is the way the economists look at it is they make certain assumptions.
Sure.
So that assumption includes like nearly $300 million in tax cuts. That assumption assumes $1 billion reserve. So I think it's important to note that there's wiggle room for people to do things. But still, at the end of the day, if you're talking about, Senator Negron wants to borrow over $1 billion for Lake Okeechobee, well, it's not – you don't have to put the full amount in the budget this year. But you have to make a major commitment to borrowing money and to saying that's what we're going to do. So there's things like that that will cause the gears to start grinding.
The gears will have to grind on health care, no doubt about it. It is the largest single portion of the state budget. I think it's 38 cents of every dollar spent on health care in Florida. And the federal government has been sending less money to Florida over the past few years for a program that reimburses hospitals for providing care for poor and uninsured Floridians because the state has simply not expanded Medicaid. Here's the Senate President Joe Negron on health care.
I don't want to wait until the federal government acts and Congress acts, and then we go into the next session and try to build it. I would like to build out the model of what a Florida-run Medicaid system would look like. And then if and when Washington acts, Florida would be ready to go.
So, Derek Hamm, with News Service of Florida, what are the options ahead for Florida legislators when it comes to finding the dollars to pay for health care?
Well, it looks like the Florida legislature is going to get something that they've wanted for some time, and that is the Medicaid block grants. So that essentially, real simple version of that means that states would have more flexibility in how they administer the Medicaid program. And that is something that the Obama administration did not support. And there was so I think that we're going to see they will be moving towards that. That's what that was the rest of that clip that right. you just played by the Senate president. That's what he is. That is the framework that they're going to be working on. You know, how much money, you know, I'm not sure. And maybe one of the other reporters here today knows the answer to this. With all of the people that are signing up for Obamacare now in Florida to get insurance, that when if they do away with Obamacare, you know, what would happen? Not all of those people would be eligible for Medicaid. So you're still going to have some folks that are eventually will not have may not have insurance. And I'm not sure what impact that would have on the system. So I don't know that the legislature is overly concerned about that. They do want to, they think that they can save money. They created a managed care system for Medicaid, mm-hmm. and they would probably, what we would see would be an expansion of that.
Rosemary, let me bring you in here because the public hospitals in South Florida are huge recipients of some of these Medicare dollars in this low income pool specifically, which are some of these dollars that go to reimburse hospitals for the uninsured care. But there's big stakes here when it comes to health care, and it's not just what happens with the repeal and replace of Obamacare. It's not just Medicaid or block grants. It is to some degree how some of these big public hospitals stay operational.
Exactly. There are safety net hospitals in our state, Jackson Memorial and Miami-Dade. In Broward, it's Broward General and Memorial. And they have for years gotten something called the low income pool, which has been, you know, the acronym is LIP. And we've heard about LIP for the last couple of years.
Because the money's steadily gone down, cut by 50% each year. And you can't do that every year.
Well, and the reason it was cut down is because the Obama administration wanted Florida to sign up for the Medicaid money.
And it wouldn't do it.
Which was, yes. And so they, you know, after last year's fight, they said, okay, we'll give this year, but next year, that's going to be different. Well, what's different this year is we have a new president, and the safety net hospitals in Florida already are ringing the bell saying, we got a new president. Maybe we'll get this LIP money again this year. The reality is that Affordable Care Act has holes in it. That Florida didn't take the Medicaid money means some people who can't afford insurance don't have insurance. Hospitals still are taking care of people who have no other way, who go to the emergency room. And there's uncompensated care that needs to be compensated.
Gary Fineout, will health care in your estimation be the issue that perhaps is the stick in the grease of the budget and then necessitates a special session to get a spending plan together?
I think that really depends on what Congress does, because I think if they come in, as has been discussed, and they repeal Obamacare, but then they say we've got 2 years to work out the how that will, you know, play out, then I'm not sure if the legislature knows how to immediately react. I mean, I think we're looking towards the idea of block grants and giving more flexibility to the states on Medicaid and things of that nature. And Senator Negron has expressed an interest in trying to use that flexibility to cover more people. But I think until we see something concrete out of Congress, I think it's going to be hard for things to sort of just be completely upturned. Now, that doesn't stop. That doesn't mean that theoretically the legislature couldn't craft something in anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
But again, have one of those deals where this only goes into effect if we get the go-ahead from the feds.
Let's talk about education, another big potential sticking point here. It's the second largest portion of overall state spending. The Senate leadership has talked about wanting to increase education spending. House Appropriations Chair Carlos Trujillo told us, though, he thinks at least per pupil spending next fiscal year will be flat.
The total funding will go up, and there's that natural growth in the budget. The per-student funding will not go up, and that's really the metrics.
We're talking about $7,200, give or take, per student in the state of Florida. Derek Hamm with the New Service of Florida, what are the school spending options here?
You know, I'm going to defer to Gary. Gary has, over the years, I have seen Gary get so down into the weeds with governors and budget staff people. He knows more about it than some of the people that actually write the budget. So he is your education guy.
Let's rely on Mr. Fineout, though, with the Associated Press. What are the school spending options here if the chair of the House Appropriations Committee says pure pupil spending, look for it to be flat school districts?
Well, as he correctly pointed out, that one of the first things, and I wanted to let you know, built into that estimate that you talked about earlier, is an assumption that Florida will pay for the growth of any increased enrollment in schools. Then the question comes, do you also increase the amount of money above that to boost the amount of funding? One of the complications with all this, and we don't have time to get into it right now, one of the complications is property taxes. So, because it's a joint system, what people need to understand is that largely their schools are a blend of both local money and state money. And what has happened is the debate over the last couple of years has been, should you be relying on a rise in local property values to pump more money into the system? And is that a de facto tax increase? And that was part of the debate last year. That will likely be part of the debate this year, because you could have more money coming into the system. You could have an increase, because as we've seen, as we've slowly recovered, property values have been rising across the state. And so the question is, do you use that money and pump it back into schools, or, as the legislature did last year, do you say, no, you need local districts, you need to keep your spending flat so that people aren't hit with what we are calling a tax increase.
Right. And Rosemary, what wound up happening for this fiscal year, so last legislative session, is the state was able to kind of find the dollars to put toward that so that the overall level remained the same for property owners.
Right. Yes. I mean, we not only pay a property tax bill levied by our school board, but the Florida legislature, you know, requires a second line on our property tax bills to pay their part of providing for our schools. And because property values are going up, so was the bill. And just by keeping the rate the same, our bill still went up. Mm-hmm. And Senator Jack Latvala out of the St. Pete area rightfully called it a tax increase. Governor Scott was trying to act like this wasn't really one. But, you know, he's got political ambitions beyond the last 2 years that he's riding into the sunset right now. He last year wanted to, you know, promote his record spending on education after having come out of the gates as governor by cutting education. Now he wants to be seen as the guy who's standing up for education. So I'll be curious to see what he does, if a flat budget is good. But the other tension big time in this is the charter school. Here comes the charter school industry, not only wanting its share of the money of the per person, but more money for buildings and more money at the local level. All these counties are passing bonds and referendums. They now want a cut of that, too.
So, Gary, how about that environment for charter schools? And as Derek Hamm mentioned earlier, with a real big charter school proponent, as identified as the Secretary of Education under President-elect Trump.
Well, I think it's definitely evident that the legislature, especially over in the House, is the top people who will be involved in making those decisions are very pro-charter school. They're very pro-voucher. I think, you know, there are limitations on how far they will go, because I think that Speaker Corcoran has indicated that he, either through the legislature itself or through the Constitutional Revision Commission in the coming year, they want to tinker with the Constitution to remove what they see as some of the restrictions from a legal standpoint on some of the things they've done. I mean, have no doubts here. If the constitutional restrictions weren't in place, this legislature, this governor, they would begin crafting universal vouchers. They've all gone on board and said that's an idea they had eventually would like to see. And for those who don't understand, universal vouchers is that idea that eventually we get to a place where everyone has a right to take their child and put them in whatever school they want, whether it's private or public.
Right.
It's a potentially costly endeavor. But it is the direction they would like to go. Now, again, as I said, there are certain constitutional restrictions, and until they get those out of the way, if the voters go along, because the voters once before rejected something like this, But that's the issue. I mean, the issue is going to be I have no doubt that we will see all sorts of school choice types of initiatives coming in all sorts of directions in the coming year.
Gary Fineout with the Associated Press. Derek Hamm is with News Service of Florida. Rosemary O'Hara with the South Florida Sun Sentinel. We're looking ahead to 2017 and the legislative session and how it could impact Floridians. Stick with us here. Still to come on the Florida Roundup, we'll deal with drugs, guns, and energy. That's next.